In the episode you're about to hear, our guest mentions ABWE veteran missionary Paul Shook, who served faithfully in Japan for many years. At the time of the recording, Paul's health was in decline, and we weren't sure of his current state. Well, on February 27th, Paul Shook went to be with the Lord at the ripe age of 101 after having served the Lord many years faithfully. And so we dedicate this episode in his honor. Greetings and welcome to the Missions Podcast, the show that explores your hard questions on missions, theology, and practice to help goers think and thinkers go. I'm Alex Kochman, Director of Communications and Engagement with ABWE, joined, as always, by Scott Dunford, pastor of Western Hills Church in San Mateo, California, and former missionary, wears lots of different hats, and most importantly, joining us today is you, our loyal viewers and listeners. We're so glad that you're here. We hope this show is a blessing to you, and we have exciting announcements coming soon that we're going to save for the end of the episode. But for now, if this show is a blessing to you, remember before you go to leave it a positive rating and review in your podcast platform of choice that helps other people get exposed to this. And so we encourage, if you haven't done that yet, maybe you've been listening for a few months, maybe years, and you've never taken the plunge and gone ahead and left us a note in your favorite podcast app. We appreciate that so much, and it helps these platforms deliver that content up to people who can be mobilized and trained and encouraged through it. So thank you for taking that next step. Let's dive in now. Enough of that. Scott, we've talked about your missionary past on the show before. Of course, you, like any good missionary, you had a training journey to get to the field as well. You had some hard languages to learn and familiarize yourself with as you were getting ready to serve in Asia. And I know that our guest that we're talking to today was a part of that journey, right?
Yeah, it's exciting to have a returning guest, a friend of the show, author, a trainer, former missionary for many years in Japan, Dr. Jim Ruff. And also, Jim's wife was the administrative assistant for our region when I first started. And so, of course, made me love them even more because she was our lifeline to everything going on back in the States for a while there. But Jim, it's so good to have you on the show. And thank you for your investment, not only in our lives, but the lives of lots of missionaries. Tell us a little bit about your background, of why language was so important and how you, as you began your missionary journey, and why you want to help other people understand the importance of language.
Hey, listeners, if you've been here for a while, you know our tagline already: helping goers think and thinkers go. Well, we really mean that. Let me ask you, what are you going to do with everything that you're listening to right now on this show? And could it be that the Lord is leading you to join his mission and extend his kingdom among the nations in a new way? Remember that God doesn't call the equipped. He equips the called. He gets the most glory by using normal, weak, doubting people. Maybe you're ready to say what the prophet Isaiah said, "Here I am, Lord, send me." If you think missions, whether that's short-term or long-term, is in your future, we are here to partner with you and your church in the process of sending you. Our team wants to talk to you here at ABWE. We're a family of ministries extending across more than 80 nations of the globe, engaged in evangelism, discipleship, and church planting. Our team wants to talk to you. Go to abwe.org/sendme. Again, abwe.org/sendme, all one word. No guilt trips, no high-pressure sales tactics, just a friendly voice here to pray with you as you and your church discern your calling. So start the conversation now, abwe.org/sendme.
One of the things that I found as a real blessing was being saved in Japan, coming to the Lord there, being called of God to serve as a missionary to Japan while I was actually there in the military. Coming back to the States, I had a real burden to learn Japanese, which I had not done during the time that I was there in the service. So I was able to take some language in college while I was going through my training at Cal State. But the thing that was exciting to me, the most wonderful part of language learning, was the prospect of being able to actually communicate heart to heart with the people that I was going to be serving in Japan. Our language acquisition method was a little unique. At the time we went to Japan in the mid-1970s, most of the missionaries were being trained through going to language schools. In our case, in the Kagoshima area, we didn't have a language school, and our missionary colleague said, why don't you two try out a new course that is being written and work with two ladies, Christian ladies, who live here in the area? And so we actually did work with language helpers right from the beginning in learning our Japanese. And that was a fascinating challenge, but a very great introduction to some things that I would end up then later on teaching our ABWE missionaries to know and understand about language acquisition.
Jim, we've joked here around the headquarters, you've probably made this joke yourself, that what do you call a person that only knows one language? You call them an American, right? Learning foreign languages, whether that are currently spoken, biblical languages, if you're talking about seminary students, it's just not a part of our culture, right? And so I think this is something that when I've spoken with missionaries that we're mobilizing, we struggle with it. It's intimidating to us, and maybe rightly so. It is a great undertaking, but we know it's possible too. And we're going to get more into that as we go on. So what would you say though, for missionaries approaching this for the first time, as you once did, and as Scott did in his missionary journey as well, what's the biggest mistake that you've seen people make when they're learning a foreign language?
I think probably the biggest mistake, Alex, is assuming that acquiring enough language to get along is really all you have to do. We hear that some languages are very, very difficult. Scott's language certainly was. Any of these South Asian languages or the Chinese will require you to learn tones. In Japanese, we had three different levels of address. We had three different writing systems. We had three different forms of Japanese that we had to learn to accompany each one of the Chinese characters we learned. And so it was a very challenging language. But the student who says, oh, I don't want to learn one of those languages. I want to learn Spanish because it's easy, has made a grave mistake right from the start. Because even though Spanish may seem easy, not only is it not as easy as they might think, but the purpose of learning the language, the goal for learning the language, Alex, is mastering that language. And to master a language requires a great amount of effort, no matter what language you're learning.
So you see this a lot. And I would have to admit that, like, even though I knew intellectually that I needed to learn the language, that when you come into a culture and there's so many people that speak English, and really the truth is English has just become kind of the lingua franca of the whole world. It might be like Greek was back in the day of Jesus, where it's just like, it seems like everyone speaks or many, many people speak it. And so there is a push in some areas, some circles of missions that says, hey, just jump in, learn the easy language or use the trade language, maybe of English, ministry to who you can. And language learning just slows down the process of the gospel. I know what Alex and I think about that. I know even from my own experience and really my own mistakes, what I think about that. But what is your opinion about that, about taking the time to not just learn a lingua franca like English or a trade language, but really getting down into the heart language of the people? Why is that so important?
I think, number one, Scott, it's the word that you just used, heart language. If we really want to be able to speak to the people in a way that gets to them, that they really can be caused to think about the subject rather than the language they're speaking in, it makes such a huge difference. They hear what you're saying with their heart, not just their head. Michael Niebauer, in his excellent book, Virtuous Persuasion, made a terrific comment that I agree with completely, and that is that it's not only our responsibility to communicate the gospel clearly, but it's also in language that can be understood, but it's also our responsibility to teach the people the language of our faith, the language of the Bible, the language of Christianity. And doing that effectively requires that you're able to communicate well in that language, not just with the second language of that person and what might be a poorly acquired second language on my part.
Yeah, Michael Niebauer, we had him on the show not long ago. Actually, people can go back a few weeks and listen to that episode. Another important related point to that is it also teaches that Christianity is not just from this other culture. Whether it be an English-speaking country or whatever context you're coming from, right? It communicates that Christianity is for all nations, all tribes, that it can indigenize anywhere. It can incarnate, if you'll allow that, you know, analogy. It can take on flesh in any obscure, remote dialect or tribal language. And I think there's so much that we can learn from that too, even just in challenging our own hearts. Am I willing to be humbled, to embarrass myself, to be able to speak with broken grammar that makes me sound somewhat like a child to a native hearer? But am I willing to go through that humiliation for the sake of the ministry that the Lord's appointed me to? Now, there's something else with language too, though, and I want to get your thoughts on this, Jim. So I feel as though I was shortchanged. It's my fault. Okay. It's not anyone else's fault. But at the time that I was doing my undergraduate in biblical studies, there weren't biblical language requirements with my degree program at the institution where I was. I think that's since changed. And so I just had this one track mind. I wanted to get my slip of paper and get out of college and get on with life. And that was something of which I've had to repent. You know, but because of that, I didn't have that biblical language training. And I feel as though there's a disadvantage from that. Do you feel like, conversely, flipping the coin here, Jim, that there's an advantage to learning not just a biblical language, but broaden it to just any language? There's an advantage that gives you in communicating, in preaching, in teaching, and of course, in sharing the gospel, in all of the things that a missionary needs to do to communicate well. Because I know even from some personal study that I've done with biblical Greek, for instance, just having to relearn English grammar in order to make sense of biblical Greek grammar gives you an edge up. And I wonder if you've seen the same benefit for your ministry, that because I had to boil it all down to understand what is this English language that I'm speaking, what is going on in Japanese here, does that make you more careful and more effective in your communication in other ways? Can you sketch out what that might have looked like for you?
Sure. I think one of the great joys of teaching English to someone who is learning English as a second language is to recognize the fact that English is hard.
It sure is.
English is a very hard language. And having taught Japanese people, having taught Bhutanese people, having taught Spanish people, English has given me the insight necessary to say, I am so thankful that I not only learned Japanese, but I also learned Greek and Hebrew. Because the willingness that you mentioned earlier to humble yourself to the point where you become an infant in a language is tremendously helpful as a missionary. It gives you the ability to understand how difficult it is for other people to understand you. It gives you the ability to understand why the complexities of language are worth learning. It helps you to realize that learning the grammar is not all there is to learning a language, and that the application of language skills in life actually builds up the ability to communicate truth in a way that is absolutely essential. I had the incredible experience of teaching Hebrew in Japanese to some of our Japanese pastors. And what a joy and what a humbling experience that was, trying to learn the grammar again in such a way as to communicate it in my new language of Japanese. There are so many blessings and benefits of really understanding the process of language, what it means. God gave us language.
Yeah.
And so we have the privilege of realizing that our God can also help us in the process of learning it.
Language, you know, isn't just a way to communicate ideas. It's also shapes the way we think. And to learn another language is to enter into another way of thinking in some ways. The way things are expressed, the idioms that are used, the similarities between languages, but also the differences. And I think that also allows you, when you come to scripture, to recognize that, you know, I've gotten into arguments before, and I'm sure you guys have too, with someone who's like, well, it's in plain English, and that's the problem, right? Like, the Bible wasn't originally written in plain English. Yeah. And with a different way of thinking, a different way of processing information and communicating that information, and learning another language kind of gives you a sense of humility about the whole process of recognizing that you're not just taking exactly the same ways of thinking and turning into a language I understand, but you're also trying to enter into another way of thinking completely, a different kind of mind, a different way of organizing and processing right. That information. And once you recognize the complexity of that, it makes the challenge of reading the scripture more challenging, but also I think more rich and full and in 3D and color, not just in black and white print, allows us to explore of the depth of what was happening in Hebrew poetry and Hebrew play on words, or even in the Greek grammar and the ways that people would be using those words to help accomplish their theological purpose as the Holy Spirit's guiding them in writing scripture. So I think it's so helpful to even try the process. If those of you mm-hmm. who aren't going to learn a new language but want to start dabbling in it, that will help you too. You know, just to force yourself to be stretched a little bit in that area.
And realize the fact that whether you are crossing a culture in your own country or crossing a culture by going around the world, or even crossing a culture by studying the Bible. Mm-hmm. Whenever we reach into the past, whenever we reach into the lives of other people, the minds of other people, we are making a cultural journey. It's opening up a new world, and you are walking into that world as a guest, as a visitor who desires so much to become at home, to be a part of the world that they live in. And how exciting that is.
Well, I don't want us to skip over something foundational here, Jim, too. And there's a lot of the benefits of language learning. We've used this technical term before, language acquisition. People might even hear that and think like, well, that sounds so technical. Why aren't we just talking about learning a language? Even that technical term reveals that we're talking about something very specific that is one of the building blocks of somebody's journey to a mission field. And there's different approaches to language acquisition. There's different models of the best way to go about learning a language. I think we all agree, like, any attempt is better than no attempt.
Right.
But for your standpoint, what's the model that you endorse, that you recommend, that you've taught others over the years? And just help us understand why that matters, because not all approaches are created equal.
One of the approaches, Alex, that I think is extremely helpful and a recommendation that I would make to all language learners is to understand, to acquire phonetics. I believe that phonetics is absolutely crucial, both for your ability to communicate well, but also for your ability to understand what you hear. In English, we have about 44 different sounds that we use and hear regularly. But people in other cultures will speak sounds that we are not familiar with. We will be hearing things that we've never heard. We'll be forced to communicate, whether it's clicks or tones, whatever it might be. We're forced to communicate a language in sounds that we have never made before. One of the phrases that I like to use is, we have to take off our English mouth and put on our Japanese mouth or whatever other language we might be learning, because it's the only way in which we will pronounce that language in such a way that the people will be able to identify with the sounds that we're making. Language acquisition as an adult is not the same thing as learning as a child. A child learns naturally through the ears, the language, and they have a perfect pitch, a perfect way of sounding the language, so that someone listening to them on the phone really doesn't know whether they are native-born speakers or from some other place. But as adults, we have to devote ourselves to the process of learning according to the ways in which we have acquired adult languages, adult subjects that we're learning. We have to apply different principles of learning, and phonetics gives us a good part of that. Another part of it is simply the recognition of the fact that language learning is a process of not only reading and hearing a new language, but it's speaking that language as well. And that means that we have to be willing to embarrass ourselves. We have to open our mouths and speak. For me, that was an important thing. For my wife, it was much more important, because Jan was not willing to open her mouth until she felt she had it mastered. I blundered in as a big oaf and said, "I've got to talk." So I started using Japanese, even when I knew that I would make mistakes, simply because speaking while learning is so important.
It's interesting. I'm just going to share this, Alex, you know, because when you start learning a language, especially a language, like, I shouldn't say especially, because I feel the same way when I'm trying to speak Spanish, which I don't speak Spanish, but if I'm trying to use a word, if I try to use the right pronunciation or use the Spanish, you know, rolling my R or something, I feel like I'm making fun of the language. I feel like I'm doing a caricature of Alex Trebek on Jeopardy saying burrito, you know, and so you're there's something in you that says, I don't want to do that because I don't want to make fun of it. And so when learning Chinese, it was a real struggle, because it felt like learning, saying the tones the right way, you know, like just really simply like ni hao, it felt like I was actually like kind of mocking the language to say it the way they were saying it. Yeah. Because like we would not mimic someone's English accent. We would recognize that would be like offensive. And so to do that in another language, it feels like you're disingenuous or that you're making fun of it. And so trying to get over that hurdle to try to like listen to what you're hearing and say it the way they're saying it, is really a challenge for us. And yet the best way to do it, like Jim said, or at least one way to do it, is you got to throw yourself into it and try and fail. And the truth is, like, I've found over and over again, I'm still finding it out, because I'm kind of relearning Mandarin. We're in a highly, our church is very diverse. Lots of different languages are spoken in our church. But you know, we just had like an outing with students and we made Chinese dumplings or Japanese gyoza, if you want to say that. I'm not sure if I said that right. But you know, like the dumplings, it's jiaozi in Mandarin. And so, you know, learning the language again, but you know, what I found is people just appreciate you trying, you know, and that kind of leads us, maybe, I don't know if Alex, you wanted to add to that, but I was going to say, like, it kind of leads us to our next question of like, if you're not planning on going overseas and you are planning on staying in your town in middle of Ohio, I hope that's not the case for you. That'd be sad, but no, I'm just kidding. you're in Michigan, you're in Pennsylvania, you're out here in California, which is probably more obvious why you should learn another language. Should non-missionaries try to even learn a language? What are the benefits in just relationships of someone who's not planning on going overseas, not planning on living overseas, maybe lives in a predominantly English-speaking community? Why should they try to learn languages?
Well, why not is the first answer I guess I'd give. We are insisting that one of the responsibilities that we as Christians have is to be observant of the people who are our neighbors. to understand what their lives are like. And God is bringing into our neighborhoods so many people who speak languages other than our own. And while the average American would insist that it's their responsibility to learn English because they live here, there is a great benefit in being able to walk up to that neighbor who speaks only Arabic or that neighbor who speaks Spanish and be able to greet them, to be able to begin to learn from them some phrases that are part of their language that will help them to see that we really do care about them. But there's another practical aspect, and that is learning another language will give you then the possibility of God's introducing you into a culture that you might be able to minister in without even realizing that that was a direction in which you were going. You might be learning the language just to broaden your knowledge and your ability to read different things. I know people who are attending universities and graduate school who have to learn languages for the theses and dissertations they're writing. Well, since they have to learn them anyway, and they love the Lord and they want to use what God has given them, this may be a way in which the Lord's preparing them for ministries they don't even anticipate. We've had missionaries. I was mentioning to Alex that our dear brother Paul Shook is soon to be in the presence of the Lord. Paul's son was born deaf, and Steve was the reason they came back to the States to learn sign language. After they learned it, they went back to Japan, and they were introduced to a couple of young men who were burdened to start ministry among the deaf in Japan, their peers. And because of that combined interest, the Shook started learning Japanese sign, with the result that not only did they help that ministry, but they participated in it, growing over a dozen churches in Japan as a result of that wonderful way in which God had prepared them to think about deaf ministry, ministry with sign, and reaching people in Japan who in many ways were not only lost, but emotionally separated from the rest of their own culture.
Yeah, at the time of this recording, Paul is, as you mentioned, likely going to be with the Lord soon and is 101 years old. And what a legacy that exists there. I do want to circle back on something we talked about earlier, though, as we think about, okay, how am I going to learn language? And this would be something you would especially face if you're in the States and you still believe, okay, having language under my belt, that's going to be an advantage in my context. That's going to make me sharper in these other areas. So I'm going to take the plunge. I'm going to do it. But whether you're at home or whether you're on the mission field, either way, there's this issue of immersion. And if I'm not completely in it, I'm going to be challenged to constantly be falling back on my first language as a crutch. I've heard many accounts of missionaries that have struggled with that. Maybe they'll plug in with a group of expats in their city. Maybe they spend a lot of time with their own team of fellow missionaries. And the question becomes, are we going to speak the language we're learning? Or are we going to speak exclusively English behind closed doors? And are we missing out on opportunities to sharpen ourselves in those situations? I've seen both approaches, and I've seen people be, this word is overused, but a little bit legalistic about it too, and say, no, it must be all of this because of the benefits that you'll receive from that. Do you want to comment on that as well? Because I know that can be a point of contention. That can lead to real division among missionary teams too. And it'd be good for other people, even that aren't missionaries, to be aware of the pros and cons of how your environment of language learning is either going to help that process or make it harder for you.
I think the environment of language learning is a crucial part of how we develop fluency. I'm going to use an illustration that I've used with our missionaries in the past in training them that has become more crucial at this point. And that is, if you are truly going to learn the culture, if you're truly going to learn the language, there has to be a certain amount of immersion. Mm-hmm. You will use your English. There will be people who want to speak with you in English. And if you're in the States and there are people around you who are learning English, you can be a help to them just by doing that mm-hmm. for them. But if you are, say, on a field that is away from the United States, we have now the availability of communications tools that allow us to interact with people back home in ways that we never could before. It used to cost us $25 a minute to make a phone call from the field to the States. When it's that expensive, you don't make very long mm-hmm. phone calls and you don't make very many. But if you're living in Japan, for example, and you have the capability through Zoom and through other social sources to be in touch with the people back home all the time, there is a temptation never to really become part of the culture mm-hmm. in which mm-hmm. you live, never to learn the language effectively because your mind, your heart is still back there where you were in the States and not where you are among the people whom you are learning to love and to whom you'll be ministering the gospel over the Lord willing over the years ahead.
That's an important reminder. I mean, I think that applies to so many things in ministry as well, not just learning the language, but learning the culture and acquiring a taste and a love for the culture in addition to the language. Again, if you are one foot in, one foot out, don't be surprised that your success is limited. Don't be surprised that you're taking longer than others to really feel at home. Don't be surprised that the homesickness is maybe more than it is for some of your teammates 3-4 years into that because of the foundation that you've laid, right? And we could even apply the same thing to ministry right. in the States. Am I really willing to get down onto the level of those whom I've been called to reach? Scott, I know that you've experienced those things too. And I don't know, do you look back, Scott, and do you wish you'd done it any differently based on the wisdom that, you know, we're hearing now, Scott?
Oh yeah, a lot, you know, and it wasn't because Jim didn't tell us this. So I'm not blaming Jim. In fact, the things that he taught us, Carol Bibigos, she was part of that at that time. I still remember many of the comments that he made. A few things stood out to me. I can just reminisce for a second, but like the most important word in any language are the words you know. Do you remember? I don't know if you remember saying that, Jim. You've probably said it 100 times, but I still think about that a lot. As you're learning a language, pick up on the words you've learned and build off of those. And that was that's something that just kind of stuck with me. But okay, back to your question. I would say a couple things from my observation, and I'm not an expert, and so I'm going to defer to Jim, you can veto my comments here on this. One, I would say agencies and organizations and teams need to really, really hold people to the fire on language learning because it's hard and you want to quit.
Yeah.
Or if you're like me and you're just a go-getter, you find a million ways to do ministry with your bad language, and it ends up making for shorter term gains. And you'll see, I've seen it, you know, where guys will make, looks like they're doing a lot more than anyone else is, but like the people who take the time to get really good at the language go farther, you know, and it's a marathon, not a sprint. And so, you know, you feel pressure sometimes in the field to like, I want to report good things and I'm doing stuff. I don't want to just be learning language for 4 years. That feels like a cop out. And sometimes it is, but not usually, but the people who've taken the long road generally go farther. And I think that that is worth remembering. I would also add that to that, though, is that not everyone's going to do it the same way. And so sometimes I felt like there was a struggle with some who love sitting in a classroom and they like to write out their characters every day and they do it a certain kind of way. And they really grew and learned a lot that way. And so they wanted everyone to do it that way. And like for me, I felt I learned, yes, I had to be in the classroom some, but when I was like out on the basketball court, like chatting with the guys and being forced to use those words every day, I got better faster. You know, so I think there should be a little bit of flexibility in recognizing there's different ways to learn the language. There's different methods for practicing your speech. and to allow a little bit of flexibility, not on language acquisition, but on how people need to learn the language. Because I think finding a way, it's hard. It's the hardest thing I've ever done. And I would say I'm not very good at Chinese. I was okay then and I'm terrible now, but it was that year of concentrated 40 hours a week language learning was probably the hardest mental thing I've ever done. And so it's easy to try to want to just shortcut that. But putting in the work and finding ways to make it enjoyable and learning how to focus your mind and your energies that way can be so helpful. And I would say even to this day, even though I don't have long conversations with people in Mandarin, the fact that I know some Mandarin, it just gives me a leg up. I've had Asian people say, you understand us. And I'm like, why do you think I understand you? I know I don't understand you, but you do. You understand our thinking because they hear me speak a little bit of Mandarin and they know where I've lived. And it just gives me an advantage. And it helps people feel like you cared enough about them to try to learn something about them and their history and their culture and their background. And it just gives you one more opportunity to minister to people that you wouldn't have had otherwise.
One small thing for me, I'm the guy in the room here who hasn't gone through this, but everything you're saying resonates with me. I can recall one time, maybe I've even shared this on the show before. If I have, you can stop me. We had Syrian neighbors in our neighborhood and seeing them outside. I remember one day, and there was a period of time where I was trying to learn more Arabic vocab and ended up not pursuing that a ton, but greeted one of the family members with assalamu alaikum. And that opened the door. Mm. There was this, you don't hear that in York, Pennsylvania. Okay. And there was a double take. And from there, a relationship that lasted a few years opened up, and our families were able to spend significant time together over meals, and spiritual things were discussed, and still have a real fondness and affection for that family, opened just by a greeting in another language. Uh-huh. I can imagine how much more effective we could have been had I been conversant in Arabic. Now, fortunately, they're fully conversant in English, but how much more so should we commit ourselves to this? Jim, what would be your final exhortations then for people listening to this, for people maybe being convicted, like, I just haven't been putting in the hours in language study as I should be. And whatever you feel most, is on your heart to share. But I wonder if, a closing thought might be important to remind people that there's a law approach to this and a grace approach to this too. And we need to have rigorous discipline. We also need to recognize God's going to use us even with our really imperfect language study all the more because he gets glory, right? What are your thoughts as we wind down?
I can't rebut anything that either of you said. You both stated it so well.
That
falling in love with the people is falling in love with the things that are part of their lives, and the more they see how much you care and how much you're willing to put yourself out to become part of their culture, even to the point of their saying how well you're doing when you know you're falling flat on your face. I'd like to share a story, if I could, that I shared with our pre-fielders so many times, but it's such a good one because a lot of people really struggle in language learning. They go with every intention of doing extremely well. And there was a missionary who had the absolute best name for a missionary, Jonathan Goforth, whose story I'd like to tell. Jonathan and his wife, Rose, arrived on the field in China. And this is back in the 1800s. So I want you to imagine that life was very primitive and they weren't sure what they were getting into, but they moved into what they considered a comfortable home and had a language teacher, Mr. Lee, who came for exactly 2 days. And after demonstrating that he was so afraid of them and so nervous about their probably poisoning him that he ran away, they never saw him again. Jonathan continued to try to do his Chinese study as best he could over the next few months. And then his dear friend Donald McGilvery came from his home, Knox College, arrived there, and those two were such good friends. Their friendship continued until Donald actually died many years later. McGilvery was incredible. This man was such an had such an ability in learning Chinese that, Scott, I hope you'll bear with this. He was able, within his first month of Chinese study, to give the entire character, all the characters in the Gospel of John, with all of, with their readings, their pronunciation perfect. And this was in addition to his regular Chinese study. And alongside of him was poor Jonathan. And Jonathan struggled. In fact, after Donald got there, the two of them would get up, and Jonathan had been trying to share the gospel during the time that he was learning the language and really struggled to do that. Donald would get up and start to speak, and they would say to Jonathan, sit down, we understand this one. We don't understand.
Oh, boy.
And finally, it reached the point where Donald turned to Rose, or Jonathan turned to Rose one day before he left and said, if I don't get the handle on this language, I'm afraid that my ministry is going to be useless. And so he picked up his Bible after thinking about that for a moment, went to the place where he normally would meet together with Donald and the people, and he began to speak. And all of a sudden, all of the study that he had done, all the idioms he had learned, all the language that had come to him, it opened up, and he began to speak in such a way that when Donald started to get up, the people told Donald to sit down and said, we want to hear this one. And Jonathan ran home and told Rose, the Lord has broken the back of the language. I was able to speak. And there's another part to this story that I'll share briefly. He was so excited and so thrilled and so effective in his use of Chinese after this, but he always went back to that moment, because several months later, he received a letter from his friends in Knox College, and they shared the fact that they one day felt burdened to pray for Jonathan. So after the meal, they got together, and they all got on their knees, and they prayed for hours for Jonathan.
Wow.
The day they prayed. I can't say this without crying. The day they prayed was the day that the Lord broke the back of the Chinese language, and he was able to speak. This is not going to happen in every case. That miracle will not always be there, but the Lord is there with you through the difficulties of learning the language, through the difficulties of acquiring that culture, and it's worth every moment you spend. As you said earlier, Scott, it's not anything but a marathon. And we always used to say, after 2 years of Japanese language study, we have just begun. We're thinking in the language, we're communicating the language, but we will spend the rest of our lives learning Japanese.
Wow. There's no way we could end other than with that powerful story of God's grace at work. Thank you, Jim, for joining us. Now, at the beginning of the show, I mentioned an important announcement, and so we'll tag that on real quick before we head out. And that announcement is this, is we've mentioned it a few times, and we now have the ability, you can upgrade your Missions Podcast subscription, whether you subscribe in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, you watch us on YouTube, however you do it, you can upgrade to premium. That's right. If you go to missionspodcast.com/premium, you'll be able to head on directly over there and purchase a membership on our website that'll give you access to important extra bonus content. Each week we go over time and we record an additional segment where we debrief the discussion or have a completely different conversation. Scott and I, as well as our producer, Brian, who knows, maybe once in a while we'll bring on a guest. You'll get access to a private Signal thread where you can network with other missions thought leaders, people doing the work of ministry in tough places, even people whose identities we can't always share, but you'll get vetted and you'll be able to join that special group. You'll also get access to regular live chats to webinars featuring Scott and myself as we dive into hot trending missiological topics, issues of praxis and ministry, and so much more. We're so excited. Honestly, Scott, I mean, we're thrilled. Like, this is really encouraging for us to get to this point where we can offer you so much more, because we've seen how the Lord has used this content over the years. And we just think, and if we can provide more solid content like this while you partner with us to make more of it possible through your generosity, that there's so much more that we can do in the cause of the Great Commission together. So go on over to missionspodcast.com now, and would you upgrade your membership and go premium? You won't regret it. Until next week, go make disciples of all nations, and we'll see you then. God bless.